Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. There we go.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine.
Yay.
And now, please welcome Ron.
Yay, and we're back after having last week off. And are you still there, Ron?
Hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. It cut out or something. Are you talking?
No, I can.
Okay, oh, I was just wondering, because you cut out.
I like, will all the time.
Like, it's awfully quiet here. We had last week off, which was probably a good thing, because I had the week 7-day cold, and I'm still getting over it, and had to go to the doctor and everything, so that was rough. But in the meantime, I took the All About Wine private jet to Colorado Springs, one of my favorite cities of all time. And, if I could move there today, I would move there, but... And I can still do the show, and you all would never know the difference. So right now here in Colorado Springs, I'm just at the near Manitou Springs, between Manitou and Colorado Springs, Colorado. It is a very nice 70 degrees, partly cloudy outside, and we have a real slight north wind, and the humidity is down. It's like 32%. And tonight's low is going to be a very cool 46 degrees, so it's going to be very nice, and let me check and make sure everything's working. Yes. So I believe we are talking about Colorado tonight, Ron. Ron is quiet again. Ron, I don't hear you.
Me?
Yeah, now I do. Are we shorting out or what?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Let me double-check all my connections here and be sure everything is good.
That one sounded kind of loose. I don't know what that was, but there was a static there for a second.
Hmm. Hear me?
I can just now, yes.
And I might have something wrong with my microphone here. Okay, coming in.
Got you now, sure.
Okay, as long as you can hear me. All right. Colorado Springs, beautiful town. I love Colorado Springs myself.
Yeah. Oh, you cut out.
Yeah, you're good.
Everybody's connected. Nope, you're cutting out.
Uh-oh. Got part of that.
This is live show right now, folks, so please bear with us.
56 minutes left.
Hear me?
I just heard hear me just now.
Can hear any more than that?
Now I hear a little bit more, yes.
Thank volume. I adjust the volume on my headset.
Okay.
Thing me?
It just sounds like it's cutting out or something. I don't know. It's like every couple of words or something.
I don't know. Let's
I got all that.
See, is that, let's check this.
Getting all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about now?
Yeah, I got you in there good now.
You coming through?
So far.
Lose it again.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
And I don't know.
No. Maybe let me try and call you back real quick and see if that does anything. If you're there.
Can you hear me?
Hear you.
Okay. Let me call you. Let me call you back and see if maybe it's a connection or something with these other lines going on.
Trying to call Ron back. Please hold. I got Ron back.
What?
Get a little bit of it. It's still shorting out. I don't know where it's shorting out at.
Oh.
You try unplugging the microphone and then plugging it back in?
I did. I tried that.
Okay. Well, we're having technical difficulties somewhere. Please bear with us.
Fine up until we got on the air.
Yeah, we were talking okay with that. That's interesting. I don't know why.
Twitter one. I don't know if this microphone was fine though. I don't know. Just all of a sudden.
Okay. I got you pulled there.
Can't hear me.
Just heard can't hear you.
Can't.
Can't.
Can't hear me. No,
can't hear you.
You can't. Ant.
Ant hear you.
Can't hear you. Oh, well.
That was
we
good.
Have a good time, even though nobody can hear us.
You know, usually on these shows, that's when we pick up like 40, 50 people listening. And it's like, remember the one show we did? We had like 20 minutes or something, and it completely cut off, and we couldn't get back connected together. We had like 60, 70 people listening to that show. And then we do an hour long, and nothing happens. Like, and he cut out again. I can't hear him. I heard Ant again. I don't know. Watch, we'll get 100 people listening tonight live or something. Okay, if y'all would like to call the show... well, while it's still working, at least part of the ways, it's 646-727-3235, 646-727-3235, and give us a call, get on the switchboard, we'll put you on the air, and hopefully Ron will be here to answer some questions, or we can play solitaire. Let's see what we can do here. Oh, man, I don't know if it's the different the connections or what's going on. It's cutting out at random.
Phone and everything seems to be okay. It was working all right.
See, I got that whole sentence. Phone and everything seems to be working all right, and, you know, okay.
Am I breaking up still? Or are you,
That I got all of it.
Maybe.
Uh-huh.
We found... I don't know what it was. It might have been a connection here on my microphone, but I don't know. It was working okay, but
okay.
I moved around and maybe it.
Yeah, I got most of. I got everything. About 99% of what you just said.
99%. I guess 99% is better than 20%.
Hopefully, let me see what I'm getting messages here from. People listening here. Oh, okay, they can hear you. Okay, I tell you what, just I guess we'll go ahead and start. They said they can hear you, and we'll see what we can do. If it cuts out or if you ask me a question and I don't respond, then there's probably something I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Thing and you can hear me. If I do cut out there, then IM us immediately so we can know.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
Colorado. We're talking about Colorado this week. Mike is Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs, beautiful city. I've been there, too. I know what you mean. It is a gorgeous city. Colorado Springs, by the way, is located in El Paso County. That is south of Denver, two counties south of Denver. Denver's north and a little bit west of Colorado Springs. That is the area there is... all along that ridge there, that's right before you start getting into the mountains. That's the front edge of the mountain range there. And it is a they call it the Front Range. Whenever if you're in Colorado, if you're a Colorado visitor or something, the Front Range runs along the front edge of the mountains. That includes Denver and Colorado Springs, Pueblo, on down to Trinidad in the southern part of the state, Fort Collins in the northern part of the state. That's the Front Range. Most of the visitors from the east go to the Front Range. That's where you will find them. That's the majority of that's before the mountains, the majority of people there. You start going into the mountains, start going into the Rockies, which is right there, and start heading west. You'll go through the Rockies, and you get to the western edge of the state. Now, Colorado State, let me, for those of you who are not familiar with Colorado, anybody that might be listening overseas or something, not familiar with United States states, Colorado is pretty much a square state. Back when they were setting up states, there's a little bit of history for anybody out there who might not know. Back when they were setting up states, the eastern states were set up just boundaries and stuff like that, rivers and whatever they can find. As they got to the western states, they started to do it in straight lines, and they started to use as much straight lines as they possibly could. And the states were set up to be equal size, using 2 degrees the latitude on the map, and that's why you have states like Oklahoma and Kansas and Nebraska and North and South Dakota all basically the same size. When they got a little bit further west, they started to use 3 degrees, and so therefore you'll find Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Montana and Wyoming, which is larger states because they basically made them 3 degrees in latitude. So Colorado, no rivers that form boundaries on it, and so it's just a square state, basically a square state. It is east of Utah, north of New Mexico and Arizona, south of Wyoming, and it also touches Oklahoma a little bit on the southeast, and it is due west of Kansas, so it's right out in the middle of the state, completely surrounded. No major bodies of water, but a whole bunch of mountains. The water from the state comes from rivers and from snowmelt, which is from the rivers. Yeah. The wine industry in Colorado has been there for quite some time. It actually... wine industry got started in Colorado back in 1899. It was governor then, Governor George Crawford, founded the city of Grand Junction. And in 1881, he planted some of the first grapes in around Grand Junction. Now, Grand Junction is in the far western edge of Colorado. Actually, Mesa County, and a rather large county, actually one of the bigger ones in the state. But he planted some grapevines in Mesa County, about 60 acres worth, actually, quite a few there. And excuse me. And he also planted some fruit trees, apples, and a lot of peaches, apples, peaches, different things over in that area too. By the early 20th century, grape growing in Colorado was booming. It, a lot of mining was going on around the state and all that at the time. They were digging silver and there was a gold rush in Colorado actually too for a while at that time. Again, a little bit of history on the states. Western Kansas used to be, Colorado used to be further in Kansas, and they divided up when the gold rush was because Colorado didn't want Kansas coming in. It was a conflict with the gold rush, and so they made the Colorado smaller and Kansas a little bit bigger on that at the time. But the earlier 20th century, there was a booming wine business there. In 1809, it was reported that they harvest over a million pounds, about a million and 8 pounds of grapevines, or grapes from Colorado in 1909. There is over a quarter of a million grapevines bearing fruit, and there was close to another 100,000 that were planted that weren't bearing fruit yet. So it was booming. The grape industry and the wine industry in Colorado was booming in the turn of the century in early 1900s. There was at that time over 1,000 Colorado farms, almost 1,500 Colorado farms were involved in grape production, which was a big business, as it was throughout the eastern United States and throughout most of the country then. But as we have learned so far many times, Prohibition in 1916 put a screeching halt to most of this wine production, this wine business in Colorado. And the General Assembly of Colorado at that time when Prohibition was enacted, excuse me, I've got a scratchy throat tonight. General Assembly of Colorado enacted a statute, and it put Colorado dry about 4 years before Prohibition. So it pretty much stopped Colorado from producing anything before Prohibition even went into effect, which, you know, Colorado was a strong advocate of the Prohibition at the time, and so they enacted the Colorado, the mini Prohibition in Colorado, in actually in 1914 it went into effect. So 4 years before the National Amendment, 1916. So commercial winemaking stopped, and grapevines were ripped out of the ground, and that was the end of it. That was basically it. There was and most of the areas planted apple trees and a lot of peach trees, fruit. Colorado is well known for their fruit. The climate for growing trees, a lot like Vermont, Maine, that area there, especially in the higher elevations in the colder areas. Prohibition obviously failed and was repealed in 1933. But it has taken Colorado over 70 years to get themselves back into the wine industry, back into the wine mindset, if you will. It's pretty much exploded in the last 20 years or so. It's from basically nothing to over I'll let you know how many wineries are in Colorado now. Colorado wineries have just exploded over the last 20 years or so. The 1970s really is what started up, which started to move the production up a little bit then. A lot of wine was stored in vats in Colorado. In 1977, the General Assembly of the state of Colorado enacted what they called the Colorado Limited Winery Act, which created a special permit for small farm wineries. I was looking at the legal page for Colorado, the page that the licensing and the alcohol and tobacco bureau of state of Colorado, and they have rules and regulations set up for the beer industry, and they have rules and regulations set up for the liquor industry and for tobacco, but the rules and regulations basically ignore wine. There is very little that is stated about wine, very little that's said about wine. in those rules. A lot of those rules were made quite a few years ago, and since wine was basically ignored at the time and there wasn't much to worry about in the state of Colorado, wine wasn't mentioned. So a lot of the state rules that they use now are those of beer, or even lower alcohol levels of liquors. But, again, I thought that was strange that they didn't have anything about wine. Just about every state I've talked to so far has a big section about wine or has different sections about wine. Florida included in that. I, contest to that. I have to do my paperwork at the end of each month. We just did it a couple days ago, and there is a whole stack of paperwork we got to do for the state and everything. And they're supposed to be getting it online, so I hope that happens real soon, too. We've had paperwork that we've been doing. They've been trying to put it online for the last year and a half to get everything on there so that we can file electronically, which is something that would be great. But, you know, I go on about that. So the Colorado, the farm winery, the special permit for the small farm wineries, basically is the backbone of the Colorado wine industry. Most of the wineries, I talked to a couple of them, most of them are very small wineries. A lot of very small wineries in Colorado. A lot of them that sell just within the state of Colorado, just within a town. They don't even, you don't find much of them selling outside of their immediate town area, the immediate areas that they're in. Bill still shapes all the nature of the wineries, what the each winery is producing, limited vintages of wine, all that stuff. This one particular bill is pretty much dictates what's going on in Colorado. Created a counterculture, if you will, in Colorado, where people started to gravitate away from the big cities and stuff and started to head out toward areas that were off the beaten path. Palisades was one of the big areas in western Colorado. And because of that, a lot of people started wineries out there, and it was that was the area that picked up and started to become the wine regions of Colorado, the western area of Colorado. This was counties I just mentioned, the I got a blank again here, but the western areas of Colorado and the counties out there is what started. And a lot of wines and grapes from that area. Are you there, Mike? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, good. A lot of the wines and grapes from that area were started by people who were just moving out there and not to say counterculture areas and all that. Because they were bringing in grapes and mixing Colorado grapes with California grapes and Colorado grapes from just in Washington and Oregon and just about anywhere that they can bring them in, it was creating quite a bit of confusion within the Colorado wine industry and within the country, actually. When you see Colorado wine, you weren't sure what it was doing and if it was 100% California or 100% Colorado or a mixture of California and Colorado. So in 2005, the General Assembly of Colorado made what they called the Limited Winery Statute of 2005. Basically what it said was wines with the Colorado grown seal on the label must be 100% Colorado grapes. Previously, they had it set up so it can be as little as 75% of Colorado fruit or grapes, and they were getting a lot of mixtures from everything else. So in 2005, they amended that so that it had to be 100% Colorado grapes. So now if you get a wine from Colorado and it says Colorado grown, it is 100%, not a percentage, not 75% or so. Yeah, Colorado State, a couple of people I talked to said the state is very, very helpful in the wine industry. Because it is a reasonably young industry, it's only been within the last 20, 25 years, 30 years or so, basically at the most, that the Colorado wine industry has been booming. The state of Colorado has been very helpful, very beneficial to the wine industry. And in doing so, they have provided funds for viticultural, state viticulturalists. They've provided funds for enologists, for wine research programs through the Colorado State University. They have been working on finding great varietals and growing techniques best suited for the areas in Colorado. A lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of state money and pride has went into it to improve the Colorado wine industry, which I give them an applause for that. I think that's fantastic that a state would stand behind the wine industry. You're absolutely right. Thank you. Because there's so many states that tend to battle the wine industries and stuff. I won't mention any particular states like Florida, but there are some of them out there that it seems like they're butting their heads with them all the time. So, little background, a little history of Colorado wineries now. So basically most of the wineries you find in Colorado has been within the last 20, 30 years. The majority of them are rather recent, wineries. Now, Tara, I have to give a shout out to someone. I was talking to someone at, a wine festival last, Saturday, and he listens to our program on, usually on archives. He said he never gets a chance to listen to it live. He listens to it on archives. And I just want to give a shout-out to him there that he runs a company, Cruise One. He books cruise lines and stuff, and he's listening to us. And he said that I was talking to him a little bit, and he says he enjoys understanding and listening about the soils and stuff like that, for the areas. And then, and I wondered, if, people did. And he said it is interesting. So, I'm going to talk about some, soil and all that, but, I want to thank him for bringing that up to me. That, is something that's, always good to get a little bit of feedback there.
Of course.
Oh. The Colorado has the highest elevation in the United States for a vineyard. Actually, it has some of the highest vineyards in the world. Very high elevation for most, for a lot of the wines. The Grand Valley area in northwestern Colorado, most grapes grow in that area around 4,500 feet elevation, or if you're in metric, 1,219
kilometers or something?
I'm thinking liquid, meters. There are some vineyards located in Delta County, which is in the western part of the county, and that are almost at 7,000 feet elevation, which is 2,134 meters. Tremendously high elevation to be growing vineyards. You wonder about the cold and all that stuff. Does it get warm enough? Just to give you an idea, by comparison, some of the average plantings in Argentina are in the 2,000 to 3,000 foot range. So when you're talking 4,500, even 7,000 feet elevation, that's more than double most your average plantings in Argentina. A 2,000 to 3,000, again, meters, 610 to 914 meter range. So Colorado has a very high elevation, a tremendously high elevation for vineyards. The wine growing regions of Colorado, there are wineries throughout the state. You can find wineries speckled in all sorts of different cities, all sorts of different towns, throughout the whole state of Colorado. There's award-winning wineries that, go from the Front Range, and remember I sent you the Front Range, right before the mountains. Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, Colorado Springs all have wineries that are, award-winning wineries. But then you, most of the wineries, though, are located on what they call the western slope or the western end of Colorado, the where it goes down heading toward Utah and that area there. The AVAs, Colorado has two AVAs, American Viticulture Areas, and the two AVAs are Grand Valley and West Elks AVAs. Those are the two AVAs of Colorado. Both of those are located in the western slope, right in the counties bordering on Utah. 75 to 80% of all wineries in Colorado are located in these two A's. Actually, about 75% of them located in just the Grand Valley AVA alone. So they're majority of them are within AVAs. Estate bottled wines are acquired and labeled from these particular AVAs. Colorado, though, has, again, I refer back to the state helping them a lot. And there are other states that do this. It's not just Colorado by any means. I know of a couple others off the top of my head. But Colorado, I was impressed that they are doing it, too. But other states are also helping a lot. But the Colorado wineries have numerous wine trails throughout the state. These are set up by the Colorado Wine Industry Development Board, a group funded entirely by the state of Colorado. And these wine trails are made so that you can drive them or bicycle through them. And in some areas, some of the wineries are close enough, there's trails, walking trails that you can go to wineries and stuff. So it's something that the state really promotes within the wine industry, the wine trails and all. The vineyards in Colorado are usually in a higher elevation, river valleys, and temperate climates. A lot of them are located on mesas Mesa and Delta counties, which is the two counties where you'll find the two AVAs, Mesa and Delta County. There is some acreage in Montezuma County where you'll find some vineyards, but most of them, and again, Montezuma County is in the western slope. The majority, though, like I say, of the Colorado wine industry is in the Junction and Valley. I'm sorry, Grand Valley AVA. And this is close to the towns of Grand Junction and Palisade, which produce 85 to 95% of all the state's grapes, and most of the wineries are there. It's a great grape growing region. The area around Palisades is a desert region. It's has to be irrigated. There's a bunch of canals running through there that connect to the Colorado River. You don't think of an area right down like that as too much of a desert. You would think that it's green, but because of the mountains, the weather comes through and it dumps the rain before and or on the mountains, and you don't have the amount of rain falling. You do get a lot of water in the rivers from the mountains and from the snow melt and all that, although they are the first ones to start dragging water out of the Colorado River, which by the time it gets down to ready to run into the Gulf of Baja down in Mexico, south of California, there's actually times of the year when there's no water at all flows into the Gulf of Baja from the Colorado River. It's already used up everywhere. But they're the first. They have canals that go on there. Growing season's very short. Compared to vineyards that you're going to find a lot of other areas, California or any place out west, the growing season in Colorado is extremely short because of the elevation. As there is a lot of wind, a lot of a constant flow of wind coming around the mountains and in the desert there, there's really not much of a problem with mildew or blight or fungus or any of that that you find in lower elevations or wetter regions. So because of this, they can really limit the amount of sprays that they use. I didn't read too much about organic wineries in Colorado, though. It may not be a big thing, or they may just take it for granted that because they're not spraying too much, they are organic. But the way some areas are, and like we've just covered in the past few weeks, some areas in California, particularly Lake County and Mendocino counties, how they brag so much about the organic vineyards that it seemed funny I didn't find more on Colorado. But a very limited use of sprays. The desert nights are usually pretty cool. The days are hot and sunny, and because of the high altitude, ultraviolet rays do affect the grapes, which brings out a lot of natural acid and sugars. The higher level of sugars makes for a quicker ripening season. And so because of that, they have no problem bringing up the bricks, the sugar levels that they want in Colorado and in around Palisades and all the wineries there in the two ABAs, Grand Valley and West Elks, because of the sugar levels on there. So a lot of Colorado wines tend to be very alcoholic, very, very high in alcohol because of the high sugar levels, either that or sweet. And they tend to get away from sweet wines there. They tend to make a drier style. So when you start going drier style, you got to do something with that sugar and it turns into alcohol. So very alcoholic wines. The warm air that comes up to the Dubuque Canyon, which is to the east of the Palisades, protects a lot of the grapevines in the spring months. And instead of having to wait longer in the year to bring up our later in the spring to start harvest or to start blooming, the plants are able to bloom in mid-April because of the warmth coming up from the to the valleys there. Winter temperatures are cold in that area. The elevation and it's Colorado. It's in the mountains. It's going to be cold, but it's not. It's cold, but it's not. They don't really have a whole lot of real cold weather in a row. It gets below freezing, obviously, because of where it is, but it's never dropped. And it's funny because I read this and I went, whoa, you know, that's not a good thing. But it said it's never been less than minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit. And you're going, oh, wow, that's all. That's cold to me. But it's not going to hurt the grapes. 23 degrees Fahrenheit is still not going to hurt the grapes over a period of time and all that. The desert soil in that area is a mixture of sand and clay. Because of that, it drains very easily. The water, the grapevines never set in water. It's always dry. And they have to water, quite a bit because of the mixture of sand and clay. The temperature extremes really are ideally suited to, white wines. And Riesling being, more the white wine of choice than anything, Colorado is, really starting to, do well with their, with their white wines, with their Rieslings. The West Elks ABA is located in southwestern Colorado. It's fed by the North Fork of the Gunnison River, and it encompasses an area of four or five counties. It's a little bit smaller ABA than Grand Valley. This is where some of the highest vineyards are located, actually some of the highest vineyards in the world, 6,417 feet elevation above sea level, some of them. That's 1,956 meters above sea level. They're growing Rieslings, Gewürztraminer, and Pinot Noirs there, and they're doing, and they're great luck with it. They're having a tremendously good pulse with the Rieslings and the Gewürz, particularly. the low precipitation in the area means that using the canals, the West Elks growers can precisely control their water. They don't have a problem at all about how much they give it, how little they give it, and because there's not much rain, they know how much water the plants are going to get and are getting, and they're getting great results of it. But because of the cold weather, they tend to get a lower yield on the grapes. It, a little bit earlier season, a little bit shorter growing season, the Elks, our West Elks AVA. And because of this, they're getting a little less than 1 ton per acre on average for the grapes, which is really pretty low. A lot of areas try to get 5 ton per acre, which is an average most places try to get. West Elks is only getting 1 ton per acre. Although Grand Valley AVA is only getting about 3.5 tons an acre. So it's not, because of the cool weather, it does affect, it is affecting the growing of the grapes. This, most all the grapes planted there are Vitis vinifera, the classic California French varietals. Most popular grapes you're going to find is Merlot, which ties with the Cabernet Sauvignon in Riesling for the amount of grapes, for the number of acres planted. Chardonnay, although Chardonnay is grown, it seems like, everywhere in the world. Syrah, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc, Gewürztraminer, and Vernier. Are basically the grapes, although they are doing others. A lot of the grapevines in Colorado are planted on their own rootstock, which is usual to the leaves. They're not grafted onto different rootstock, which is very common. This helps to develop the grapes into their natural flavors and stuff. It doesn't, you know, and this is something I don't know. I tend to wonder if the rootstock is going to be that critical. Not to criticize them for what they're doing and it's great and it's wonderful, but when you graft something onto a rootstock, it's really, I mean, you can graft an orange tree onto apple rootstocks, and you're still going to have oranges. It's not going to diminish, in my opinion, the quality of oranges. But Colorado believes that staying with the original rootstock of the plant, it gives a better taste, better quality, better grape, and therefore makes a better wine. I don't know. I would have to. You really can't compare, because once it's picked, then again the winemaker varies the things. Made the exact same step all the way through and doing the exact same thing with one on grafted stock and one that's not grafted. I don't know. That's something that would be interesting to check and see. And so, maybe someday. But they, again, they don't use any other rootstock except for their own, which, I thought was quite interesting. If you want wines from Colorado, you can buy them. Call them first. Most all the wineries there are boutique wineries, very small wineries. And because they're such small wineries, they do not have tasting rooms and stuff, but they do have a shipping. They can ship pretty much everywhere. And if it is okay to ship into your state, you don't have to, with new laws that were passed in Colorado and 1st of July in 2006, they do not have to, you don't have to visit the winery in order to be shipped to you. That used to be the law there. But so many states have so many different rules and everything. So if you want to order some wine from Colorado, they'll be happy to ship it to you if they can. Another thing, too, about Colorado, and since, Mike, you're sitting up in Colorado, they're saying that you got to be careful with the temperatures there. In the summer, you can really be hit by hypothermia very easily. Also, stay hydrated. It is a desert. A lot of areas is a desert, and you stay hydrated while you're sampling wines. And something else, if you go to Colorado and start tasting wines, keep in mind, too, that if you're at a winery that's at 7,500 feet, you're about over a mile up in the air. And that higher altitude is going to affect how the alcohol is going to affect you. Drink a little bit slower, acclimate yourself to the alcohol, and if you don't, because of the altitude, you end up with a nausea or a hangover that you wish you'd never had. It's just something you got to be careful about there. I talked to a guy in Black Canyon Winery for a little bit today. He referred me to a couple of three things. Colorado Association for Viticulture and Enology, called CAVE. A great organization, he said. He's fantastic. He said they help the wineries in Colorado all the time. Everyone that has anything is always turning to CAVE for information, for events. It's great growers and wineries. They help the grape growers and wineries in the legislative and the political matters, and they're constantly in their battling for the wineries. He was quite impressed with this organization, the Colorado Association for Viticulture and Enology, CAVE. I just want to pass it on because he was so fascinated himself. Black Canyon Winery. This is located, next to Black Canyon, the name of the winery. They're at an elevation of approximately 5,800 feet. They're on the southern slopes of the Grand Mesa, which is in southwest part of Colorado, not too far from eastern Utah. He said perfect for growing Riesling grapes. That's their grapes. 1999, he planted about 30 acres of grapes and Riesling grapes, and he's doing a little bit of experiment. He said it was Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris, but right now he says Riesling. He said it's just a phenomenal area. He traveled over to Germany. He checked in Germany for a while to see what they were doing, how they were doing, and it was he was really excited and came back and put the Riesling grapes in the ground, and the climate with the warm days and cool nights was just a perfect climate for the Rieslings. He did his first some of the first Rieslings in that area, in the North Fork area, had won awards, national awards and stuff, and so he wanted to follow suit and do the same thing there with some world-class Riesling. So he put the Rieslings in the ground and has been extremely thrilled with the results. His first crop, commercial crop, came out in 2003, and he says it's constantly good results, high quality, almost a perfect balance of the alcohol, the acid, the sugars and everything on it. He makes a rather dry Riesling, he said. They opened up a state-of-the-art facility in 2005, and he's aiming for being the premier Riesling producer in Colorado, which with the enthusiasm he has, I'm sure he will be able to do it. He's been doing a wonderful job. He said these sells pretty much around the area there, and that's about it. They also grow Jonathan and John Gold apples and a couple of varieties of peaches, which are available. Those can be ordered also, he said. He said, if you're going to talk, tell them they can order that stuff. And he said, now's the time. So if you want to order any of that stuff, Black Canyon Winery, you can order some of those things there. And one thing he did say, which I thought was extremely interesting, he said there's a lot of apple growers in Colorado. apple orchards were everywhere. And about 20 years ago, apple orchards were hard to keep in business. Started to get an influx of apples from outside of the country being grown in other parts of the world. Because of that, apples were being produced and sold cheaper than the quality apples that they could produce in Colorado. A lot of the orchards were chopped down, burned, and grapevines are being planted in their place. It reminded me a lot of Kentucky. When you visit wineries in Kentucky, and I'll get to it more when we get to our K's and talk about Kentucky, but a lot of the wineries in Kentucky were old tobacco farms and tobacco growers, and tobacco is not a popular thing now, and so they've switched over to wineries. And this is what's happening in a lot of areas in Colorado. Apple orchards, the land is, if they can keep it and if they can do it, they've been transferring it over to a vineyard and a winery. If they can't afford it, they've been selling it. So it's a loss, it's something that's switched over, and we're getting more wineries because of that. Black Canyon Vineyards is online. You can just look up Black Canyon Vineyards, and you can get a hold of them there if you want to order anything. The guy was quite interesting, and he was really thrilled with his reasoning. He was that was his baby. That was his grape there. Although he said he's finding some other grapes and seeing what's happening and seeing what's going on, but the reasoning has been the one that's been his child ever since the beginning there. He also referred me to a site, German site about Rieslings, and I looked at it, and it was just the queen of grapes, the Riesling. I mean, if you call the Cabernet the king, then the Riesling is the queen, and it's been the primary grape coming out of Germany for years, and how the Germans have use the Riesling as a base grape in a variety of different hybrids and a variety of different clones using other German and French varieties, and how it's it just caught on and became just a basis for a lot of great grapes. One thing I did read in that site that I do want to pass on to you, it says one of the oldest and most popular Riesling crosses was the Miller Thurgau. And I knew it was Professor Mueller who created it. And he was the one that created the grape. I didn't know where the Thurgau, Gal is in Switzerland, and he was teaching there at the time. And so it's a town in Switzerland. And Mueller Thurgau is his name in the town where he was at the time. I didn't know that. So just a little bit of an aside, a little bit of history there on that. Got a hold of another winery, tried to get a hold of him. The phone rang and rang, and then said, please leave a message. And I said, thank you, and I hung up. Valley of the Wind Winery. Valley of the Wind Winery, a very small winery located in Estes Park, Colorado, which isn't too far from where you are, I don't believe there, Mike, in Colorado Springs. Estes Park is down the road.
Yep.
What's that?
And up in elevation, too.
Yeah. The big ski resort at Estes Park, actually. And this is where the guy is located, in Estes Park. And he makes about 1,000 cases a year is all. But he makes a variety of 1,000 cases. I mean, it's not just like one. And everything is sold exclusively in Estes Park. I think Estes Park has a big film festival every year, too, if I remember correctly. Because my daughter went up there and met a couple of actors and all that during the film festival 3 or 4 years ago. But Estes Valley of the Wind Winery makes a a Riesling, a Syrah, a Chardonnay, a pear wine, a Semillon, and a Eau de Vire, whatever that is, blend, and a La Veta Dulce. I defined some more information on that stuff on their website, and I couldn't, I looked around and everything. I don't know what it all is, but 1,000 cases a year also there. He has a river that runs through it. He has himself a little, bunch of stainless steel tanks, and, he does basically everything himself, from what I've read here and all that. He tries to bring out more of a sweet characteristics in the wines. It's a sweet Riesling, a sweet, the pear wine. He said the website says it tastes just like pears, and so it, you know, interesting stuff there. But again, it's emphasized on the site too that they can ship. So if you'd like to try a pear wine, that's another possibility for you there. Mm-hmm. Colorado is the number of wineries in Colorado just overwhelmed me. I was so surprised how many wineries there were in Colorado and how many actually there were located in the, 2 AVAs. The western part there. You get in that plateau on the western part of Colorado, and I saw a map with them, and there was just on and on and on. And most of them were very small. Most of them, produced just a 1,000 cases or so a year. 1,200 cases, something like that. That I had, so there's 38 wineries in Colorado. Another chart said that there's 86. Another one said there's 92. The fact that they're making them, they're opening up so fast and everything. But again, all of them tends to be, I've had a Colorado wine. I asked people to bring me wine from different states, and I had a Colorado wine, and it was fantastic. It really was. It was a white wine. It was a Chardonnay Riesling blend, and it was just absolutely wonderful. A Chardonnay Riesling blend is almost didn't seem like they'd go together, but it was a very interesting, very, very soft, subtle wine that the particular winery I got it from, and so. Colorado, not only is it a beautiful state, but they really do have a lot of wineries now. So,
all right.
There we go.
Very cool. I didn't know the bus was there in the Florida area since I'm over here in Colorado. It's just before 6 o'clock here and in Colorado Springs. Did you clock out again? Okay. And I have to jump on the jet real quick and head back to Florida because I have to be at work at 4:30 tomorrow morning. So I'll be flying back very soon. I appreciate it, Ron. Thank you very much for the information. One of my absolute favorite states, scenic states, and places to visit, to live, whatever. It's just wonderful out there. Out here in Colorado. Are you still there? Well, Ron, I think we lost Ron. Anyway, coming up on September 11th is another wine class from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the winery. Ron, I don't know if you're talking. I don't hear anything, but I just want to give a shout-out real quick. September 11th, wine class at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52. That is in Land O'Lakes, Florida, for those of you with a GPS. Zip code is 34639. Give them a call directly at area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113 is the number to call Florida State's Winery, or email corp@flewn.com, corp@flewn.com, or visit the website, great website with a lot of information, and you can subscribe to their newsletter that's very informative. There's recipes, there's wine facts, there's information on the classes that are coming up and other events, including Wine Fest. You definitely want to subscribe to the newsletter. Go to the website at www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com, and visit them on the web. And, Ron, I don't hear you.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
You hear me now?
Yes, I hear you now.
Good.
So, anyway, we'll be we'll catch y'all next week, and I believe we are out of the Steve. Yeah, we have what? What's next? Delaware or something? Or is that, did I miss a state? I don't know. You're out. All right, we'll see y'all. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, 1,000 Mics. Thank you, Ron, as always. It's very enjoyable and informative and educational and fun, and we appreciate it. And Blog Talk Radio's out, and we're still with 1,000 Mics.
Let me cancel.